It can be intimidating to stand up and face a crisis head on. However, Skip Heitzig reminds us that when we have compassion, we'll also find the courage to act.
Listen carefully. Sympathy begets bravery, and here's why. People who know their God know what God would do in a time of crisis, and they act like Him. Daniel chapter 11 says, "The people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits."
Make the connection.
Probably noticed that in most disaster films there are two types of characters. One always panics and usually ends up dead. The other steps up and helps lead people to safety. Now, while most of us may not face a life or death situation, we do face other types of crises on an almost daily basis. And today here in The Connection, Skip Heitzig shows us that when our faith shines in those moments of adversity, it can not only benefit us, but bless others as well. We'll get to that teaching here in just a moment, but first, we wanted to let you know just how easy it can be to understand the mysteries of Revelation. Here's more about Skip's latest book.
You may never understand quadratic equations. You may never be able to grasp quantum physics, but you can understand the book of Revelation. Sadly, the final book of the Bible is the one that's often ignored because of its reputation for being difficult to understand. But with a little help, you can reap the rewards from the careful study of one of the Bible's most powerful books.
The more you study the book of Revelation, the more you understand why Satan fights so hard to keep God's people away from him.
Get the help you need with Skip Heitzig's new book, You Can Understand the Book of Revelation. Available for just $12 when you call The Connection at 1-800-922-1888. Most of us probably don't need to understand quantum physics, but we can all benefit from studying Revelation. Discover it all for yourself with You Can Understand the Book of Revelation by Skip Heitzig. Get your copy today when you visit connectionradio.org.
We're going to continue today with our examination of Abraham's life as we discover how godly character can actually shine the brightest in the face of adversity. Stay tuned for more.
And make the connection.
Open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 14, and Skip Heitzig will get us started by explaining how adversity, which usually is thought of as a bad thing, can at times be quite positive in our lives.
Heat seems to bring out the worst in people as well as the best. This week on Thursday, the electric grid in the northeastern part of the United States and the upper eastern Midwest went out, and it brought out the worst in a few folks. A few reports of broken windows and looting of stores, but not many. It also brought out the best. And what astonished a lot of officials is although millions of people were without power and the temperatures were sweltering, the heat was so high, that people were kind, considerate, and even helpful. A few reports of folks who emptied their refrigerators and invited people in the neighborhood over to eat out in the streets, just eat all the food. It was going to go to waste anyway, but they got to meet neighbors they had never met before. Others went out in places like Boston and New York City and went stargazing, a sight many of them had never seen because of the light pollution. And it's the same way with corn. Intense heat, if you put normal corn into a 400-degree pan, it will wither, it will shrivel, it'll become hard. But put popcorn in the same pan at the same temperature, and the heat causes gases to expand, and you know the rest of the story. It expands several times its original size, and it becomes a delightful treat to young and old alike. That's how adversity works. Some people, when the heat of adversity is on, become hardened, shriveled. Others become enlarged by it, bettered by it, and bless others because of it. Chapter 14 is the story of a crisis. It is an international crisis, one that involves Abraham's nephew, you remember his name, Lot. He is captured. And that crisis moves Abraham to action. Things happen within him that cause him to be enlarged and very, very helpful during this heated time. He comes through shining in it. In fact, better than comparing Abraham to popcorn, we should probably compare him to gold. Just like gold is heated up and the impurities are skimmed off the top, this man glimmers in a cauldron of crisis. He shimmers through the whole thing, and we're going to look at that tonight. There's a passage, I know we should begin in Genesis 14, but I want to begin in 1 Peter chapter 1. Let me read it to you. Not the whole chapter, just a couple of verses. "These trials," says Peter, "are only to test your faith, to show that it is strong and pure. It is being tested as fire tests and purifies gold, and your faith is far more precious to God than mere gold. So if your faith remains strong after being tried by fiery trials, it will bring you much praise and glory and honor on the day when Jesus Christ is revealed to the whole world." Just as fire tests and purifies gold, adversity tests and hopefully purifies believers. And Abraham, as I say, comes through this glimmering. Here's the crisis. You remember Lot made some poor choices. One is that he lifted up his eyes and chose the best that the world had to offer. He pitched his tent toward Sodom. Now we find him in this chapter living in Sodom, and this is a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Why? Because a superpower comes in and captures that whole area, including Lot. He becomes a prisoner of war in this. And Abraham responds to a crisis in another man's life. The issue is this. How do growing, godly people of faith respond in a time of crisis? When that daughter that you warned not to date that guy, don't date him, he's slimy, he's no good, when she dates him anyway, when her grades suffer because of it, and maybe she even ends up pregnant, how do you respond? When that son of yours squanders his college fund on some worthless thing that he wanted, how do you respond? When your business partner invests all of that money in swampland in Florida and loses everything, how do you respond? When you hear of it, when you get the phone call, that will bring out the very best in you, or it'll bring out the very worst in you. Do you gloat? Do you get angry and say, "I told you so"? Or do you take a different tact? That's what we're going to consider tonight. We're not going to read the whole chapter, but some select verses. But you might want to ask as we go through this, what kind of a friend do you want when you're going through a crisis? And I think Abraham will fit that bill. But then you should quickly ask yourself, what kind of a friend ought you to be at a time of crisis? Now, I want to give you tonight, if you're taking notes, five qualities. Let's call them five glimmering qualities that people of faith, godly people, have at a time of crisis. Let's read the first couple of verses. I'm not going to read all of them. You'll see why after two verses. "It came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Alasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, the king of the nations, that they made war with Bera, the king of Sodom, Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, the king of Admah, Shemeber, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar." And so goes the story all the way down to about verse 11. So I'm going to kind of set up the story for you and read basically verses 11 down to the rest of the chapter. But let me give you the first quality that comes out, and that is sympathy. Sympathy. I want you to go down now to verse 11. They, and I'll explain they in a minute, took all of the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all of their provisions, and they went their way. They also took Lot, Abram's brother's son, that is Abram's nephew, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. Let me give you the background. This is the very first war that is described in the Bible. In fact, truth be told, this is the first specific description of war in history. Now, I know that you could look at documents and stela and shards and documents of wars from different countries that predate this, but this is the first time specifically we are told who is at war. The first full specific description of war in history. Who does it involve? Four kings against five. Four that form a coalition from the east, headed up by a guy named Chedorlaomer. They're from the area where Abraham came from Mesopotamia, from the Euphrates River Valley. And they came in and swept through the land, taking five city-states around the area of the Galilee and the Dead Sea, that eastern portion of Israel, including Sodom and Gomorrah. After they took those five city-states, they placed them under a tax or a tribute for about 12 years. In year 13, those five kings said, "We've had enough, we're going to rebel." They did. Didn't work. This roused the wrath of those four superpowers, that coalition. They swept through that desert region, plundered and killed and took captive a lot of people. And one of those captives was a guy by the name of Lot. Abraham hears about it, and Abraham acts. Look at verse 13. Then the one who had escaped came and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth tree of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Aner, and they were allies with Abram. Now when Abram heard that his brother, that is his nephew, it's just sort of a generic term for that, was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. As soon as Abram heard of what was going on, no doubt he heard the news, but now he is acting when it comes to Lot. Which is very interesting to me because if you remember last week's story, there was a strife between Abram and Lot's herdsmen. And Abram basically said, "Lot, you choose, take the best of the land if you want it," which he did, and they parted company, they separated. It would have been very easy for Abram, in hearing the news that it involved Lot, to go, isn't that interesting? He made his bed, he can sleep in it. It serves him right. He's the guy that pitched his tent toward Sodom and moved to Sodom. But rather than doing that, there is an immediacy in response that strongly suggests sympathy. He cared, he was concerned, and he went and he did something about it. Now, from an ancient historical perspective, this is unusual. If you read ancient history, you know that sympathy, grace, mercy were not high on the list of ancient qualities among kingdoms. In fact, one Roman historian philosopher said, "Mercy is a disease of the soul and the ultimate sign of weakness." That is why you read stories, the ancient world filled with intrigue and revenge and cruelty, not sympathy, not rescue. But here we have a change. Abram is touched, is sympathetic, cares, and he moves. He acts. Now, that ancient world, you might think, well, that has changed. Today, people are certainly more merciful, more gracious, and would move whenever anybody had a need. Not necessarily so. Not necessarily so. It is human nature to let those who have made a mistake stew in their mistake. Or even worse. Even worse. I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the Satanic Bible, just to show you the difference. This is an excerpt of their remake of the Beatitudes that you're familiar with from the Sermon on the Mount. It says, quote, "Hate your enemies with a whole heart. And if a man smite you on one cheek, smash him on the other. Smite him hip and thigh, for self-preservation is the highest law. Stop the way of them that would persecute you. Let them be as chaff before the cyclone, and after they have fallen, rejoice in thine own salvation. Cursed are the weak, for they shall inherit the yoke. Cursed are the righteously humble, for they shall be trodden under cloven hoofs. Well, I tell you what, if Abram would have had that mentality, Lot would have had no chance. But see, the godly are different in a time of crisis. When there is a war or there is a famine, generally it's Christians act first. Other people may have sympathy that wells up inside them, but historically it's shown whenever you need food or medicine or immediate response to a crisis, it is those believers or nations who have been influenced by Christians that respond quickly. Sympathy. What did Nehemiah do when he heard about the people in Jerusalem, his brothers, suffering? He wept, and then he acted. What did Jeremiah do when he saw Jerusalem fallen by the Babylonians? Did he say, well, I prophesied that to them? Ha! No, he wept. What did Jesus do when he looked over the city of Jerusalem, knowing they would reject him and knowing that the Romans would come and destroy them? He wept for them. Oh, if you would have only known what could have been yours in this your day. Jesus Christ, the ultimate man of compassion. You know, it even says that when Jesus saw the crowd in Galilee, he was moved with compassion because they were like sheep having no shepherd. And it's an interesting term. The word moved with compassion is a Greek word, splankna, which literally means intestine. He was moved in his intestines. Ancient people used to equate the deepest emotional part of a person in the gut. We might say today, I love you with all my heart. They would say, I love you with all my intestines. And to feel deeply was to feel something deep inside the gut. That's why it says in Colossians, in the Old King James Bible, to be filled with bowels of tender mercies. The idea is compassion. Jesus had great compassion that he felt toward people. And of course he said, blessed are the merciful, for they shall themselves obtain mercy. One of the greatest attributes a Christian can emulate in his or her Savior is to be a person of mercy, sympathy, compassion. Not to say, well, it serves those sinners right, it serves those backsliders right. Paul puts it this way, brethren, if anyone you know is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Can I ask you frankly, is sympathy, mercy, one of your attributes? When something bad happens to somebody, is there that immediate knee jerk? Oh, I want to help. Somebody once said, how many prodigals are kept out of the kingdom of God by those unlovely characters who profess to be inside? So he moves quickly. That's sympathy. There's another trait I want you to notice in the next couple verses. Bravery. Sympathy, one. Second, bravery. Go back to verse 14. When Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. That's going way, way up north. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. Now, we're starting to see a whole new side of Abram. We know he's a man of faith. We know he's a man of peace because he said to Lot, you take the best. We're not going to strive. We're not going to have a quarrel. So he's a man of faith. He's a man of peace. But here, he has this lion-like courage to arm his servants and go to war. Some of you know about Proverbs 28 that reads, "The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion." Now notice something. Abram has how many servants? 318. That's a large staff, but it's a very small army. And it's an especially small army against a federation of four superpowers during that time, the four kings of the East. But there they are, armed and dangerous and ready to fight. These are brave men. And verse 15 suggests a strategy. They decide, let's do something at night when it's dark. Let's divide the troops up for an ambush. And perhaps they use some of the other men that are mentioned in this passage, the allies of Abram that helped in this force. But they went after them, and this suggests bravery. True sympathy begets bravery. Listen carefully. Sympathy begets bravery, and here's why. People who know their God know what God would do in a time of crisis, and they act like Him. Daniel chapter 11 says, "The people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits." Think of Gideon and his 300 against the Midianite army. That's a great exploit. Think of a little shepherd boy named David against a big old 9-foot dude named Goliath. That's a great exploit. Think of Joshua and Caleb saying, "Let's take the land. The giants, we'll eat them for lunch." That's a great exploit. Because they know their God and they're ready to go for it. When was the last time that others saw your bravery? When was the last time you were moved with compassion and you acted upon it? The last time you dared to emerge from behind the hollowed walls of your church and take an assessment of needy, hurting people around you and say, "I am moved with compassion for them, and I'm going to do something about it." Whether it be the homeless, whether it be little children innocently slaughtered in abortion clinics, whether it be kids on drugs or kids who need a big brother or a big sister. You remember what Jesus said in Matthew 25, "I was hungry and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked and I was in prison and you visited me." And Jesus said, some are going to say, I don't get it, Lord. When did all that happen?" And he will say, "Inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me." There was a lady who was homeless. She did appeal to the church for help. The church in England, where she lived, wanted nothing to do with her, and so she wrote a little note back to the vicar of the parish. And the note said, "I was hungry, and you formed a humanities group to discuss my hunger. I was imprisoned. You crept off quietly to your chapel, and you prayed for my release. I was naked, and in your mind you debated the morality of my appearance. I was sick, and you knelt and thanked God for your health. I was homeless, and you preached to me of the spiritual shelter of the love of God. I was lonely, and you left me alone to pray for me. You seem so holy, so close to God, but I am still very hungry and lonely and cold." There's Abram. He hears of Lot. He goes, I got to do something. He arms his servants, 318, and they go for it. Sympathy begets bravery.
While it's good to feel compassion, just feeling it isn't really enough. Jesus called us to act in compassion to help those in need. It's not always easy, but since when is anything worth doing ever easy? Well, we're just about out of time for today, but before we go, I wanted to tell you how you can get a free booklet from Skip called Radical Joy. It's actually quite easy. All you need to do is pick up the phone and call us and mention that it's your first time to do so. Or you can also write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. Now, regardless of how you contact us, if you do so for the first time today, we'll send you that free booklet from Skip. So why not do that now? You can also order a copy of today's teaching when you get in touch with us. It's available on CD for just $6. And again, all you need to do is call 1-800-877-1799. 972-922-1888 or visit connectionradio.org.
And make the connection.
On our next program, we'll continue with our study of how godly character often shines the brightest in the face of adversity, and how adversity can refine our character. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.